This is the Senate Committee on Judiciary. We are having a hearing, a work session, on Tuesday, May 21st, 1985, in Hearing Room B. Today, we will be having a work session on Senate Bills 171, 375, 492, 559, 595, 903, and House Bills 2096, 203, 2304, 2513, and 2676.
We'll come to order now. We have a quorum. Senator Failey is present. And let's take a look at 2513 first. And that is the bill. Will council bring us up to date on that?
Okay. 2513 is a House bill that you heard last week. It was a bill proposed by Representative Brigiotti. What the bill does is to, well, last session the legislature made a change to drop the penalty, the revocation period for habitual offenders from 10 years to 5 years, and to change the procedure to be an administrative hearing as opposed to a court proceeding. The bill applied to those people who were revoked after the effective date of the act. This bill would make people who had been revoked before the effective date of the act subject to the same period of revocation. Passed the House.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. So if a person were revoked, let's say a month prior to the effective date of the act, they would have been under the current law, or are under the current law, under a 10-year cloud, whereas after the law, a 5-year cloud.
Yes.
And we're going to take 5 years of these earlier clouds away.
Yes, basically.
Thank you.
There are proposed amendments. There are committee amendments, and you'll find those in your book behind the staff measure analysis. Basically, what they do is deal with the conflicts that this bill has with the motor vehicle code revision, the way it's drafted, the way it was introduced. It doesn't make correct citation to the appropriate section of the revised motor vehicle laws that will take effect January 1st, 1986. So those are the impact of the amendments.
Senator Wires, we're on 2513.
Sorry to be late. I was down there Ways and Means. We're starting to argue about lottery money.
Why don't you go back?
Yeah.
Any comments or questions about the 2513-2 amendments?
I think they've moved the bill and carried the bill, but I don't understand that last amendment explanation. But that's not my.
Well, let's start.
It's your fault.
Start enough and do and try it once. Try it again.
Okay. The legislature passed Senate House Bill, well, Chapter 338, Oregon Laws 1983, that revised the Oregon Motor Vehicle Code. And in this session, it passed Senate Bill 100. And that we will have a new motor vehicle code as of January 1st, 1986.
Right.
The way the bill was introduced, it made reference to a vehicle law that will be repealed as of January 1st, 1986. This adds language so that on January 1st, 1986, the appropriate section will be referred to rather than a repealed section of law.
Okay. So it's a basic reference within the bill.
It's a reference within the bill.
Will be changed effective the date of the new Senate bill.
Yeah. Basically, it's a conflict.
It's a conflict type of it.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the proposed amendments to House Bill 2513.
All right, Senator Handy's moved amendments 2513-2. Any objection? All right, those are adopted. And Senator Handy moves House Bill 2513 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Rossing?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Cohen? Bailey?
Aye.
Handy?
Aye.
Aye. That carries. Now, let's take a look at Senate Bill 492. Bring that up because there are a number of interested parties in the audience here. Let me remind you that that bill was introduced at the request of Senator Hammond for Mr. Venata, a constituent, and had to do with the mineral exploration companies going around and blowing up the farmers' pastures over there in Columbia County, and and creating some problems. It looked on the surface as if that might be a fairly simple matter to resolve, but I can tell you it's been a real chore for staff counsel to try and come up with some language to resolve that particular situation. You know, when you get involved in property law, why, the ripples extend over a long distance. And anyway, it proved to be a pretty difficult job. There was a lot of input, a lot of letters we've received from all over the place, all over the country for that matter. Anyway, it's my recommendation to the committee that the bill be tabled and that the interim committee take up that subject because of the amount of time that I think it's going to take for us to work it out and be understood by everybody. I talked with Senator Hanlon yesterday, and he said he would talk to, that he would, I told him that was my inclination, and asked him if he wanted to call Mr. Van Atta and pass on my feelings, including my offer to do further work in the interim, and Senator Hanlon did so, and Mr. Van Atta was receptive to the idea of the interim committee work. He was going to be here today, but upon learning that the bill might probably be tabled, he didn't show up. So I guess it's fair to say that he would prefer that we try and work out something, but he has not, neither he nor Senator Hanlon is upset at all with our efforts on this bill. So, but that's where I think it is. It's one of those things. Yes, Senator Brown.
Did we have any testimony that any landowner has been personally injured or has a horse ever broken a leg on these poles? I gather they're around, but and they're deep.
There was not.
When you find one,
I don't recall any.
Okay,
I guess the exposure's there. It's possible that could happen.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
I'll move to table.
In order to accept the motion, is there anybody that's unhappy with that process?
You're moving the bill to the floor?
No.
Go to table.
All right.
All right.
Senator Brown has moved to table Senate Bill 492. Call the roll, please.
Brockman?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Cohen? Daly?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Henderson? Simmons? Wire?
Aye.
Rye?
Aye. So ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I might add that as part of my continuing education, I learned the other day there's something that's called a mountain beaver. In fact, I saw a mountain beaver hole, and they also pose problems. These are little fellows that build big holes in the side of the mountain, and then they come out at night and eat up seedlings and other things.
Well, I hope the landowners are using injection now that the Senate has expressed its view on that rather than
I don't know. I saw there's an article coming out on how you handle mountain beavers. I didn't know it was a problem, but I guess I didn't know this was a problem either.
Okay, let's take a look at House Bill 2676.
I'd like to explain what that is.
Mountain beavers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, is there going to be a hearing on the size
of the problem created by mountain beavers?
Interim committee.
All right.
House Bill 2676 is the reviser's bill, introduced at the request of the Legislative Council Committee. It's a bill that is introduced to clean up statutory glitches. Staff has been through the books that Legislative Council's office provided, and I didn't see any particular problem. Council's office has proposed amendments. Those are 2676-2 that throw in some additional glitches that they found since they finished the first day.
That's great.
And,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Hamby,
if I recall, there was some discussion on the cost of engrossing such a lengthy bill, and yet it's I'm certainly supportive of including the other glitches that have been found since. Is it unprecedented that we go with the printed bill as such and only with the attached mimeoed materials? Has it ever been done, rather than going through the expensive printing process?
since that's what we're trying to avoid.
No, well, the amendments will be printed automatically, but it wouldn't necessarily be engrossed,
no.
I suppose, but...
is that right, Counselor?
Yeah.
We don't necessarily have to be, we could send it over to the House unengrossed, I suppose.
Unengrossed.
Yeah.
Do the same thing. This is, we routinely receive theirs unengrossed.
Senator Fehler, what would you think about that approach?
Sounds wise.
All right. I did raise the question, Senator Hemby recalls, about taking this monster and 65 pages and trying to integrate these changes. And Kathleen Beaufay pointed out that, if that was to be, they'd just introduce them in the next session. She wouldn't be unhappy if we didn't do anything with the amendments. But if printing the amendments will solve the problem, if I haven't engrossed the bill, I suppose we could do that.
Also move, Mr. Chair.
They do something like typesetting for the session logs at about the same time as they're working the amendments, but or creating a tape, but I don't think that they can edit it later.
Well, okay. Would somebody like to move this to the floor unengrossed? Wait, let's stop. Somebody want to move these amendments then?
I'll move them.
And these are 2676-2 amendments moved by Senator Brown. Council, have you been moving the amendments also?
Yes, I have. They provided a separate book to deal with the amendments.
16 pages of amendments. All right, then, hearing no objection, the amendments are adopted. And then, I'd entertain a motion to send this bill as amended but unengrossed to the floor.
I so move, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Brown has moved. Any discussion on that? All right.
Do pass.
Call the roll. Do pass.
Rockman?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Cohen?
Bailey?
Aye. Hamby?
Aye.
Henderson? Simmons? Wires?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye. Motion carries.
It says relating to correction of erroneous material in Oregon Vice statutes. Well, there's quite a little bit of material in there. I think it's erroneous. I just want you to know how good I was by not proposing we put all that in this bill, too.
Yeah.
Probably your committee report will need to print boldly, and we don't want this engrossed, or with the recommendation of not being engrossed, or the system will take over and you'll get an A engrossed bill.
We'll send a letter along.
Okay.
Okay, then. Let's see, 26. Where's the bill? You got it. Yours. What's. Okay, now Senate Bill 903, somewhat related.
Proposed amendments to that, too.
And there are proposed amendments to that.
Shall I explain those?
Yes, Council will explain
Senate Bill 903 was a bill that was introduced by the Committee on Rules. It would make the Legislative Council the attorney of record for the Legislative Assembly and authorize the Attorney General to represent the legislative branch with its consent. And it limits the ability of the Department of Justice to control suits by and concerning the legislature. There are amendments proposed by Legislative Council's office, and those are in the back, included in your materials, and they are dated at SB 903-1, and they were proposed by Legislative Council's office. Basically, they said for the purposes of clarification. I don't think, other than clarifying, they make any substantial change from the intent of the bill.
Thank you.
Well, I have not had a chance yet to read the Attorney General's letter of today's date. I wonder if anyone else has. Maybe we should take a minute. Counselor, we just got that letter, so we'll take
It will take a minute and read the letter from the Attorney General dated today regarding Senate Bill 903.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Brown.
It's an interesting and true observation in a P.S. in his very interesting analysis about the department representing individual members of the Legislative Assembly who are sued in an official capacity. We are experiencing those lawsuits on the part of those who think that the best defense is a good way is to sue everybody that moves. So we do have those. We do have that role on the part of the Attorney General.
Yes, I think it's safe to say that we do not intend by this bill to change the role of the Attorney General as counsel for individual legislators in the event of suit or proceedings. Is that correct? Anybody got any disagreement with that? All right. We'll see anybody from the Attorney General's office here. Attorney General did not submit any amendments. Says, I'm reading on page 2 of the letter, the question how the legislature would direct the AG to appear in litigation not directly involved in the legislature, but in which the state is interested is not resolved by this bill. And suggest maybe this is an area that needs clarifying. Unless many members have some immediate clarifying language in mind that we could work in at this point, I would say that we might consider sending the bill out and then they can make the proposed amendments on the House side.
Do this for the need of expediency.
Yeah.
Proposal.
But.
Have you amended it?
No, not yet. We just started. We didn't see the letter until just now, so we're reading that.
On page 2, next to last paragraph, he raises a point of the letter. Yes.
Yes, that's right.
Which point? That's environmental and point of judicial.
Next to last paragraph on page 2, where the judicial branch is excluded.
Yes. That's a current question. By practice, they have continued and it would. Uh-huh. The bill leaves it ambiguous as to what their role is.
Well, should that be clarified?
I talked to the judicial branch on that, and they haven't really taken a position on it. They are aware of the bill, and they are aware of the what it's intended to do, and they have no proposed amendments in relation to that to clarify the position as it applies to them.
Mr. Chairman, the judicial branch has its own House counsel, and maybe that would give that particular position, which has always seemed to be a bit normal to me, a little bit of real-world activity.
Hmm.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Henry.
His closing, the Attorney General's closing comments on page 3 disturb me. I mean, the bill simply reinstates existing law with one exception, and then he still has a question on that exception. So the unfortunate result is restricting the services available. I wonder if we want to put the bill out. If it's if it's that questionable,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen.
Well, how would this impact when we get served with various kind of summons? And right now, we report to the AG, and the AG goes in to defend us. I mean, this various kinds of funny summons from people we don't even know.
His PS goes up. Page 3.
Oh, it doesn't preclude. Okay. But what do we have to go through? Do we have to, would we go to legislative council first? I still don't understand why. It's sort of a backhanded negative to say it doesn't preclude us doing that. And it's an assumption. Why do we want to do this anyway?
That's what I'm wondering.
Good question.
Yeah. I guess I want to know where it came from and why.
Well, it came from the Rules Committee. That's the answer to the first question. And we had
is it a topic for interim study, rather, if there's a problem?
Well, who's on the Rules Committee here? Senator Wires?
What? No.
You're not Senator Phelan?
I'm not on the committee. If you want me to engage in some creative speculation about the purpose of the bill, I can do so.
Well, I should have remembered from Senator Hanlon's testimony, but I do know that the Rules Committee was very concerned about what they saw as a flaw in the existing provisions of Chapter 180. And I know that this bill is of some concern to the members of the Committee on Rules, and I'm sorry that I can't fill you in on that. Go ahead and speculate.
The Attorney General is his own man, and that makes him hard to be anybody's lawyer when he may have a conflict of interest between himself and an executive branch elected official or the legislature. He maintains that no state agency may use any other lawyer besides himself, and that he is the sole judge of the rectitude of his charges and the amount of time that may be spent on any legal work that he does for the legislature, for example. Four instances have been opinion request having to do with ballot measure 2, where an estimate of $35,000 was made as the cost of the opinion, and a bill for about $50,000 was submitted, breaking the bank. You can think about the State Accident Insurance Fund and their lawsuit, which they lost, as a part of the picture of the Attorney General being the only lawyer that anyone in state government can have, and the Attorney General being the judge of whether he's the only lawyer that anyone in state government can have. I was involved in a ballot question lawsuit where the lawyer from the Attorney General's office urged urged a specific condition, and one of the justices of the Supreme Court asked this lawyer, "Did you check that with the Secretary of State?" He said, "No." And someone said, "Well, you know, the Secretary of State is the party here. Don't you have to ask your client what the client thinks before you tell the court what you are urging?" And that's the background for this in three ways. But that's creative speculation. I didn't hear the testimony. This would allow the legislative council to appear, and it would allow the legislature to hire an independent lawyer, unlike the SAFE situation. And it says legislative counsel shall be attorney of record for purpose of service in any case in which the legislative party is named as a party. I suppose that that is an effort to designate someone who would receive the service. I'm surprised that calling a person attorney of record for purpose of service, but nonetheless, that must be the idea, so you don't have to serve the attorney general. And you don't have to pay the attorney general if you've hired another lawyer. Everybody here knows that the attorney general is not a constitutional officer created by statute, but it is the statutory language, I'm sure, that caused the court's decision in the SAFE case, which was the board of SAFE cannot hire their own lawyer. They must use the attorney general. I think that's what the bill's about.
Well, I saw Mr. Linden here earlier. I still see him here. Do you have any? Have you seen the Attorney General's letter already? No. He says he has. Does that give you any concern?
No, he has not seen it.
You say you have not seen it? Well,
I talked to his counsel. He wanted to come back.
In what kinds of situations does the Attorney General represent the judicial branch?
The Attorney General's office has represented the judicial branch to give them counsel on potential liability and to answer some questions along those lines, and they deal in the same respect as they do for other agencies, respond when they're sued, and they get sued about the same rate the legislature does.
Mandamus?
Those sorts of things, yes.
And the nuisance suits, I guess.
Okay, Mr. Linden, come on up.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Bill Linden, State Court Administrator. The Judicial Department uses the Attorney General in virtually all matters of litigation which would become involved. The exceptions are, in a number of instances since I've been State Court Administrator, we've had conflict situations where the AG, for example, might be representing a district attorney in an action, a mandamus proceeding against a judge. In those cases, we appoint outside counsel. And there was also one instance, this occurred in early 1983, when then Chief Justice Lent decided that in the best interests of the judicial branch of government, he needed to be able to select counsel in a case in which he had been sued over a collective bargaining issue, and did choose his own counsel, who eventually was appointed as a special assistant attorney general. There is language in Chapter 1 that allows the judicial branch to retain private counsel to represent judges where, I think the actual wording is, where necessary to protect the best interests or the interests of the judicial department of government. But in routine litigation, we do use the Attorney General's services. Although, again, I think that this Senate Bill 903, we were interested in it because of the fact that it begins to make a distinction between Attorney General services and the executive and administrative branches, and how the requirement to use those services relate to the other two independent branches of government. I don't think there'd be any quibbling about the authority to provide those services in the executive branch, but there may be instances where the legislative branch or the judicial branch might feel that to protect the interests of themselves as independent branches, they needed the option of retaining counsel of their choice.
Senator Brown?
What about House counsel we have on board? I
that would be a challenge for that position and broaden their responsibilities. I'm sure they might be welcomed by your high standards.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brown, we don't have House counsel in the sense of litigation support. We have staff attorneys who provide advice and counsel to the appellate courts and to me as state court administrator. We don't have in-house counsel in the full sense of the way it's normally used in the private sector, at least. We don't handle our own litigation. We don't negotiate our own intergovernmental contracts.
Some years ago, I thought the Supreme Court had an attorney on board who was not working as a clerk for any of the judges, who simply was the attorney for the Supreme Court.
Senator Brown, we have two staff attorneys who presently are not assigned to judicial positions, who work on a variety of matters for both courts and for my office. But again, outside of any kind of litigation or appellate work or anything of that nature.
But simply that could be done by them if they were to run their current job descriptions.
I just want to say that in about, you know, we've got a whole bunch of bills here, some of which are important, some of which are important to people in the audience. The same people, some of the same people who want the other bills. And I guess I know we can sit here and debate on parliamentary procedure for a very long time.
Well, let's not debate. Now, look, I think I've got your point, and I think it's correct. And I want to go back a moment with Senator Wire's motion. Senator Wire's, I think that the motion to postpone indefinitely would be proper. Because that, in effect, disposes of the same issue that we would otherwise be disposing of with the main motion. But to just postpone it till tomorrow, I think, would frustrate the rule. So would you agree to change your motion?
Or not? Well,
Chair,
just a minute. I will, in the interest of not clashing with the chair, and I think it's very important that we support the chair as much as possible, accept your parliamentary ruling. I'm not going to argue about that now. I'd like to discuss it with you later, but for now, I think that the thrust of your ruling is that if the committee wants to take action on something, they should be allowed to, and people shouldn't be able to make motions to delay it. I think that is a very good faith ruling on your part, and I don't want to buck it. So.
Okay. I do think that a motion to postpone indefinitely is in order, and I would accept that if anybody wanted to make it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Brown.
I think Senator Wire's spirit in which he made his alternative motion or his procedural motion was for 24 hours to pass in the hope that there might be a middle ground that might provide some satisfaction to all concerned. And if 24 hours would do that, I think maybe the maker of the motion might be willing to withdraw that motion if you'd indicate that you'd permit him to make the motion tomorrow. At least that's a possibility.
Well,
so we go about our business today and let the process work itself out for 24 hours, because there has been people kind of have shifted their position here, and I think that it's a matter on which there's some deep feelings. There's large constituencies on both sides of the fence, and I think we should not run over either side and run over each other.
Okay, now, Senator, do you happen to have, Senator Brockman, could I borrow your...
Sure.
No, not that, your letter.
Oh, yeah.
I don't happen to have my copy of the next one.
It's a little scratched up with Senator. His is probably a little more.
All right, this is a very nice clean copy.
I rubbed my motion out of it.
All right. You've got your motion written out?
Well, yeah, I do.
Well, let me read from that. I just want to place the motion correctly.
Okay.
All right.
After you do that, could I speak to it very briefly to the motion?
All right. Senator Brockman has moved to place SB 409, SB 434, SB 894, and SJR 24 on the agenda of today's meeting so we can set a date for public hearings on the measures. Now, that's not what the notice says. Is it?
Oh, I have to put it on for a specific day?
No.
Well, that's exactly what the notice says.
All right.
Okay, I will amend the motion to put it on to tomorrow's meeting.
No, wait a minute. Now, wait.
Oh, come on. I didn't mean you. Pardon me, Mr. Chairman. I didn't mean that. I was getting some advice from the code.
Yeah.
Let's offer that.
Well, let's hear. Why don't we just approach it here one step at a time. I want to make sure I've stated your motion right. Okay? And the motion is to place these four measures on the agenda of today's meeting. And
today's meeting?
Pardon?
They're on today. They'd be on today's agenda.
So that's what it says. Let me see your letter. I just didn't recall the reference.
Just for purposes of deciding when to set them.
All right. That's true. Okay. Thank you. That was the motion, to place the four measures on the agenda of today's meeting. Now, right now, they're not on the agenda, so that the committee can set a date for public hearings on the measures. Now, that's Senator Brockman's motion. Now, Senator Wires, did you wish to speak to that motion?
Yes, briefly.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
It seems to me there's some chance, no guarantees, there's some chance that an accommodation could be worked out so one or more of these four bills can have a hearing by agreement. For that reason, I would like to ask Senator Brock, I intend to vote no on this motion. Could we vote? I think the motion will lose. I'd like to urge Senator Brock to withdraw his motion so we can try and negotiate on this some more.
Well,
if he doesn't want to, obviously we're going to have a vote, but I thank the chairman for the opportunity to say that.
Right.
I said it. If Mr. Senator Brockman doesn't heed that and we have a vote and it goes down, I think he should consider that that's going to make it a lot harder in the future to get action on this.
All right. Okay. All those in favor of Senator Brockman's motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
No.
No.
Motion fails. We'll take up the next item on the agenda, which is Senate Bill
595.
Senate Bill 595.
The motion back. He was trying to change.
Senate Bill 595. Council, where are we on this now?
Senate Bill 595 adopts the Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act in Oregon. There was testimony by the bar. It expands to some extent what property can be considered fraudulent transfers. And we heard testimony that Oregon would be, this was adopted by the Uniform Commission, or Commission on Uniform Laws last summer, and Oregon would be the first state to adopt this.
All right. We don't have any, do we have, yes, we have further amendments. No, that's not in here.
No?
We don't have any further
amendments. No amendments proposed in this bill.
Yes, Senator Harrison?
I would move Senate Bill 595 right at the floor of the due pass.
Senator Henderson moves Senate Bill 595 to the floor of the due pass recommendation discussion. Call the roll, please.
Rockland?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Just to have
me. Aye.
Henderson?
Aye.
Simmons?
Aye.
Wire.
Aye.
Right.
Aye. Motion is carried. House Bill 2304. House Bill 2304. Okay, now.
Shall I explain again?
Council, bring us.
House Bill 2304 was a bill that was introduced by the House Judiciary Committee at the request of Representative Springer and Representative Miller. What the bill does is to increase the membership of the State Commission on Uniform State Laws by two members from the Oregon State Bar. The bill was amended in the House to provide that the state would pay for the assessments May make payment for assessments to the National Conference of Commissioners as said monies are available. There are proposed amendments to the bill that were requested by a member of the committee that you will find in with the other materials. They're LC amendments HB 2304-2 dated 5/16/85. Basically, what they would, the amendments would do would be to limit the term of the members to no more than two successive terms, but would allow members to be reappointed after the lapse in membership of at least 4 years. A member appointed to fill out the unexpired term, an unexpired term, may be reappointed for two successive full terms. It would also decrease the members appointed from the state bar from 5 to 4. So those are the amendments.
Move the amendments,
Mr. Chair. Senator Wires has moved the amendments.
HB
2304-2,
dated 5/16/85.
All right, 5/16/85. 2304-2. Is there any objection to those amendments?
Which amendments?
Yes.
Not the hand and growth.
Oh, there they are.
Yes, they're in the bill book dated May 16th, 1985. LC.
That's
HB 2304-2 amendments. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator, was it Senator Cohen I heard doing?
Yes. Okay. I'm going to object to the amendments. I'm objecting to the bill. I've had a lot of communications from people that this is probably not a worthwhile expenditure of any kind of funds of that trust, and that I guess I would not be inclined to expand that now when you could use those funds for other matters more appropriately. So I just want to say that I will be no on the amendments. I'll be no on the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
I wanted to make a very similar announcement as did Senator Cohen. I cannot support the amendments or the bill, so.
Mr. Chair. Senator Simmons?
Ditto.
Briefly.
Double ditto.
Sitting here,
and
four people saying.
Now, Senator, tell me, one of the dittoers or somebody else, again, explain to me what the objection is to the amendment now.
Well, Mr. Chair, my objection is that to the bill itself is that the commission has been functioning very adequately for a good long time with three members, that the trust that is paying the expenses feels that it can continue adequately with three members, and that there's no need for five.
Well, so okay. The amendment that was moved provides for four members.
Well, four, three, five. I mean, three appears to be adequate, and I don't know why it shouldn't be.
Mr. Chairman, I think one of the arguments that Senator Simmons is making is during the testimony that after you've served two terms, you're on there for life, and you're going to get some unwieldy body here at some length, at some point in time.
Well, the amendments provide that you can't serve for life, though. I'm asking everybody to take a look at these amendments.
Mr. Chair, that particular language in the sub 3, certainly I'm supportive of. I'm not supportive of the increase in membership, and I'm not supportive of the funding, the source of funding, and I think that was a major objection in the testimony we received that evening.
All right, you believe the funding should not be, or the state should not be involved in funding. Is that it?
Well, I didn't see that on the amendments that we just discussed.
It's on.
Yeah. Chairman, the amendment says...
It may.
There's no mention of funding on the...
There's money.
On the dash two amendment.
May pay.
No, but the House bill as amended, the amendment to the House bill before it got over here, which is not engrossed...
Is state
provides,
funding.
Provides for funding.
All right. If it's state funding, I'm supporting of it, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. All
that's
right.
A may. Given the way we cut our budgets, it's certainly easier to have a trust fund pay for it than general fund dollars, and my guess is that the state may, if you were given a choice of whether a trust ought to pay for it or the or the general fund, I guess that'd last about a minute.
Right.
Well, but the question is whether the commission should remain at three members or should be increased in size. The way the thing... The amendments would say if it's increased in size by one member, then we're not going to burden the trust fund. The state is going to make a contribution toward the expenditures just like it does for other members of state commissions. Now, I wouldn't have any... I wonder about eliminating the contribution by the state to the dues or whatever they call it, the assessment there, but leave in a provision that the members' expenses would be paid for in the same manner as other commission members' expenses are paid for. Would that make any difference to anybody? Senator Thorne has discussed this bill with me at some length and feels that, as a matter of fact, he says that this should be provided for. If this bill becomes law, that there should be a provision made in the budget for the next biennium, but for this biennium, these expenses would be met by the emergency board.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just not going to vote for increasing. I don't think the case has been made. That's where I am.
All right. Well, I think that's what we ought to focus on is the issue of whether the commission should go from three to say four. Or not. That's the real issue. Senator Brown?
I feel that the major issue with it before us is the funding and the credibility of the commission. But that wasn't the thrust of the original bill. But there is some indication that our three members are not nearly as effective as they could be with funding. And I do know the trust is established for that purpose. But on the other hand, I also know that... It seemed to be appropriate for the state to pay its own way.
Okay, let's see. Senator Wire is still here.
I hear you.
You're still here.
I'm just getting a drink.
Okay.
Your language, Mr. Chairman, that the expenses of these members shall be paid in the manner as other... commissions are, I think, would be appropriate, and the trust could handle the dues. And that's it kind of splits the difference.
Yes, well, I think that was the direction I was trying to move in here by these suggestions. Senator Henderson, do you have any thoughts at all on this one way or the other?
Well, I'm prepared to support your proposal. What I was thinking, though, is at least it seemed like there may be five votes for making sure that there's a rotation in the terms that people mm-hmm. serve, and maybe we could at least move forward with that comment.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I think the continuity is a great value.
Well, lifetime.
Because it becomes a rapport with men from other states, people from other states, and I think that's one thing that's made the Uniform Commission a valuable vehicle for creating uniformity among the states, because these things aren't negotiated overnight, and you've got 50-person committee, in effect, why it takes years to learn the needs and manners of the other people.
All right, one of the concerns I've got is that we've just seen in the last two or three sessions here, committee meetings, where we've sent out, we sent out, the fourth uniform law that this committee's passed down? Fourth or fifth, and we have
this is a, you know, the Uniform Commission of State Law is a very, apparently a very influential organization. We've got three, we're limited to three lawyers. The state of Oregon is limited to three lawyers. And it just seems to me that for the importance of that commission and the fact that we seem to be embracing so much of its work, it just, I would like to see more representation from the Oregon Bar on there. Yeah. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Three plus the life members.
Well, I guess there is a life member right now.
Mr. Chairman, I think the requirement for life membership is having served 20 years, not 8. That was my recollection of the testimony. And if the having the state pick up the tab for the expenses would permit the trust to carry the dues for the organization, and we could move state funding for the expenses, I would feel comfortable going to 5.
Well, I'm kind of just guessing around here, but my suggestion is that the bill be either put over for further work session or tabled. And if it is tabled, I would vote for tabling the motion, but I would work to try and get a consensus of the group as to what we could do. Maybe we can't do anything. I don't know. That's the way I'm looking at it. And I'll...
I would move to table, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Senator Simmons has moved to table Senate bill. Their House Bill 2304. Call the roll, please.
Rosman?
Aye.
Brown?
No.
Cohen?
Aye.
Bailey? Hamby?
Aye.
Henderson?
No.
Simmons?
Aye.
Wires?
No.
Fry?
What's the vote count?
3-3.
4-3-9.
Pardon?
4-3-9.
Well, all right, I'll vote yes. Take care of it somewhere or the other.
Okay.
Senate bill. But I'll give notice that I'm going to try and see if there's some way we can get this agreed upon. I understand if I've got it right now, the only concern really is the expenditure of state funds. Nobody has any objection.
It's still permissive, Mr. Chair. The state may.
Yeah. Do I hear any objection to the idea that the number would increase from 3 to 4?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to go talk to the dean of my law school again.
I object to the increase in
that. Okay.
Right. Senate Bill 171, which we received substantial amendments from the Attorney's Office about 20 minutes before the hearing today. Do you want to set this one?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I'm going to ask the...
We've got three bills for them. And one of them is...
Okay, so I call the committee members' attention to Senate Bill 171. Council advises me that just a few minutes before our meeting today, we had some proposed amendments from the Attorney General. Is that it?
Substantial.
And he says substantial. And
on 171?
On 171. And Council suggests... He says there are a couple other bills dealing with the same subject matter, but I am ready to do something on that now. We have three other bills, or we can put it over, and maybe...
if you want to adopt it, we can check on the style of amendments.
Senator Henson?
As I understand these amendments, well, I don't know how... I think they just are dealing with transferring the non-AFSC cases from record-keeping purposes to the court administrator. I don't know if there more than that.
There's somebody here from the Attorney General's office to explain them.
Is there? Okay, yes.
Did we?
Come on up and just... I don't want you to go through them like you would if this were a work public hearing, but...
One way or another,
we'd be soon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name for the record is Lawrence Young of the Attorney General's Office. The amendments that you have before you today essentially put you back in the situation that we were in 1981.
Good.
With one important difference. In 1981, when somebody got a divorce, they either had to pay their support through the clerk of the court, this county clerk then, I believe, or they had to pay through the Department of Human Resources. That, in essence, is what this bill does today. In 1981, that previous law was repealed because of some federal legislation requiring 10% delinquent fees, and approximately 30,000 to 40,000 cases which were in the DHR record-keeping system were tossed out essentially into a void, ostensibly into savings and checking accounts.
Yeah.
This bill does not touch those 30,000 to 40,000 cases that are out there. What it does do is say, subsequent to October 1, when somebody gets a support order, you'll either have to pay to the Department of Human Resources or to the clerk of the court. The determination will be made based on several factors. One, if public assistance is involved, you'll have to pay to DHR. That's existing law right now today. There's no change there. Second, if you've asked the district attorney for support enforcement services, you'll have to pay to DHR. Currently, almost all cases that have the district attorney providing support enforcement services are already paying to DHR, the exception being Clackamas County. There's roughly 4,000 cases in Clackamas County that, until recently, have been paying to the clerk of the court.
Well, listen,
roughly half of them have been transferred to DHR.
I'm not going to, I don't know why we couldn't have had this earlier, but I don't think, I'm not interested, unless the committee as a whole is interested in taking time right now with four remaining bills to go into a hearing on these amendments. I'd just soon put it over to another time.
Mr. Chairman.
Whatever the committee wants.
This does need to pass the House before the...
I realize that, and I'll do it.
The only concern, are there any policy questions? I don't want to ask one question in the amendments, and are we talking about handing books one? Okay. Are there any policy determinations left unanswered in that, in your amendments?
There is one change over 81, and that is that if a case is in the Department of Human Resources record-keeping system, then the mandatory support enforcement amendments, which are proposed in Senate Bill 170, would apply to all those cases. In other words, there would be automatic wage assignments if there's a 30-day delinquency. There would be, unless specifically requested otherwise, federal tax intercept of the obligor's income and state tax intercept of the obligor's income.
Okay, so that would be, that follows according to your amendments with any case in DHR regardless of what status is.
That is correct.
One other question, and I've discussed it with Mr. Chairman. Do you mind? I guess not. Do we have any opportunity in the amendments to deal with independent bank account?
So I was
going to
ask too.
I've talked with Larry about that, and I want to make sure that we know whether it's in or out or whether that option still exists.
The bank account option exists. It's found on page 7, starting at line 1. It's section 8 of the bill, and it goes over through page 8 and
this
part
is the
page
hand
9.
Engrossed?
This is the hand engrossed version that you have in front of you. The bank account option is essentially similar to what you had prior to 1981. If you don't pay your support and don't send a receipt to the Department of Human Resources, the option terminates.
Could I do a follow-up on Senator Cruz? You know, we had just perfected the bank option in 81 before they wiped the whole thing out. So is it the last version of the bank option that's in here? That was a bill we had in 81 before the whole thing got wiped out? Or
Mr.
Is it
Chair, Senator Hendrickson, the problem prior to 1981 was if you missed a payment, the bank option terminated. In 81, we said if you miss a payment, it doesn't terminate unless somebody asks for it to terminate. The problem you have now is with the cases being in DHR, they will be child support enforcement cases. If you don't pay, federal law requires, in essence, that a wage assignment be placed and the option will have to terminate. So it'll be the same.
For the non-AFDC ones?
For the non-AFDC, because this bill provides that any non-AFDC case that goes into DHR will be a Title 4D case. It'll be come under the Federal Child Support Enforcement Amendment.
Right, but I'm talking about those people that may want the option that have not asked for support enforcement services.
This bill says that in order to get the federal funding to finance this, they are deemed to have applied for support enforcement services. The basic bottom line here is, if we're going to have a child support order and going to keep a record on it, we're going to enforce it.
All right, but are they allowed, they are allowed a bank option, though?
They're allowed the bank option, and as long as they pay and send the receipt in, they won't be bothered.
But they can't, but they have to say, I think we had done something about limiting their receipt list.
Senator Kulongoski had a bill that said if you don't send your receipt in, and it was eventually enacted into law, if you don't send your receipt in, it doesn't terminate. But you can't do that, unfortunately, now because of the intervention of the Federal Child Support Enforcement Amendment.
So we don't have any choice on that? Are you saying that?
Not if you're going to put the cases into DHR. Mm-hmm. You have a choice in the sense you don't have to fund the DHR system through Title 4D You do it entirely out of general fund.
That's so expensive. Well, yeah, that's not a reasonable.
Or there's another alternative. You can charge every obligee up to $25 a year to provide support enforcement services and not use federal funds, or use federal funds either way.
No, I'm just saying, you're saying if we accept the Title IV-D money, we don't have any choice.
You can accept Title IV-D money and charge the obligee $25 a year for the support enforcement and support accounting services. There's that option.
Okay. All of them or just the bank accounts?
All of them.
Okay, you have to go all or nothing is the question.
I'd ask Mr. Sitzma up there.
Yeah.
On this
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to take a lot of time, but I'm prepared to move the amendments as soon as we get this done.
Yeah, but it does allow the bank option, but they have to send the receipts to DHR. If they miss one, they go into the other system.
That's right.
I might just say, I think we had about 60,000 people on that non-AFDC system, and there were only about 1,300 that had the bank option, as I recall, but the ones that
very
had it liked it.
Very small percentage, yes. And of all those cases that had the bank out option, they wouldn't be back in.
I'd be glad to support a motion to amend this bill right now, but I'm just looking at it, and there are pages and pages of amendments, and if they were really just received today by the committee and council, unless council has had a chance to...
I haven't. They came in about 15 to 20 minutes before the hearing.
I consider this to be one of the most important issues this session, but I'm very uncomfortable about our voting it out without having... had a chance to analyze a little more. It's got a flaw in it, and they don't touch the house. I'd like to ask if we could schedule it right away again, but unless we could do that.
Well, let's move on.
Mr. Chair, we could certainly move conceptually, and if there's a mistake found in the meantime, it's not, seeing as how it's a Senate bill, and it is such an important issue, I think we need to get it moving.
You want to move it out without any of us reading the amendment?
Conceptually. The explanation has been, you know, the testimony has been excellent.
Well, I'm just wondering if we could move the amendments today,
sure.
And then could we put it back up tomorrow or something?
No. Is it too late for tomorrow?
Yeah.
Thursday?
Thursday.
Well, okay, we can. I don't think it's going to take very long, so we can put it back in for Thursday.
Okay, but as long as we finish up with our questions today for a minute more, then I think we'd move the amendments and get staff to look at it. And
okay, did you have anything to add?
Well,
tell us your name. Go ahead and add it.
My name is Leonard Sitzman. I'm an assistant administrator with the Dalton Family Services Division, DHR. The current federal law, which is a result of the 1984 amendments to the Federal Social Security Act, really provides that there are only two ways to bring these cases in. One, the feds will not participate.